Blog Talk Radio.
November 20th, 2013. I'm Dre. He's Jay. We got NFL week number 11 recap talk going on, and we got some more refereeing controversy. It's all everyone's talking about. The zebras once again in the news. Jason, it happens every now and then. The entire week winds up getting dominated by nothing but referee talk.
Yeah, it's still going on today. A little ESPN, even though I try to avoid ESPN, some NFL Network, and all of this, most of the talk is still about that non-call at the end of the Carolina-New England game, but then also the Ahmad Brooks hit on Drew Brees. I guess he got fined. So, of course, the Ray Lewis and Teddy Bruschi offered to pay for some or most of the fine because they were in an outrage and clearly not very happy that, first of all, that it got flagged, and then second of all, that he got fined, which was, I understood the flag, not so much the fine, and the whole, the only way I can explain that last call or non-call, so it is, at the end of that New England-Carolina game is nobody on any of these major sports networks would have talked about it for a minute past the game had it been on Carolina playing defense against the Patriots, but because it happened to Tom Brady, who went into full-on Tom Brady whiny bitch mode after the game, just berating the ref. And well, it's like the more I see of him, like, the less I like him. So I really was like, good, pick up the flag. You know, shut him up, because he really needs, he's like a little kid throwing whiny temper tantrum out there. And I know this because I have a 20-month-old girl, and I'm going to get her a little Brady jersey. Because when she throws her little tantrum, she'll just look like Tom Brady. It's really, that's the way I boil it down to that. And then the hit with Brooks on Breeze in real time, when it happened, it looked like a penalty, and that's all the refs have to go by. That's it. End of story. Yeah, if you slow it down enough, you'll see that he hit him below his neck, and then his arm slid up when Breeze reacted to the hit, and it all happened so quick, and then the arm finishes through and drives his helmet up into his up his face, and he gets caught with, you know, gives him a little bit of a bloody mouth. But in real time, it looked vicious, and these refs are trained to just chuck that flag out there anytime anybody gets near the quarterback, and the violence of the hit was what they threw it on, and it was high. But it was it a flag? Probably not. But it, in the context of the game and at the moment, it looked like a bad call. But they have to throw that flag. If they're being told you got to baby these guys, then baby them. I've seen a lot less called, for sure.
Yeah. If you're listening in live and you want to jump into our football conversation, the number is 646-595-4534. If you're listening, you want to jump on in, go right ahead. Yeah, that's where it breaks down for me, is that there's so many calls that are borderline now as far as the late hits and the vicious hits and the hits around the head, around the neck, you know, whatever you want to call it. And that's where it is. That's where football is now in 2013. You know, love it or hate it or feel indifferent about it, that's where we are. We protect the quarterbacks. We look at every little hit that they get, and we try to determine, is it maybe on the borderline of being late? Is it maybe on the borderline of being illegal because it hit the head, neck, knees area? Now the knee, hitting the knee is a penalty, of hitting the quarterback's knee, that is, because they don't care about anyone else's knees, apparently. But, yeah, that's where we are. So that's why I couldn't get too worked up about that call, the Ahmad Brooks call on Drew Brees. It was a beautiful clothesline from hell. As a pro wrestling fan, I was, you know, excited to see the clothesline come back into the sport for a second, and then the flag flew, and I said, oh, I almost forgot you can't do that to him anymore. But, yeah, I'm not mad at all that the penalty was thrown. However, if the penalty wasn't thrown, I also wouldn't have been mad because I could see them letting him get away with that shot because it did look like it maybe got him around the chest or the clavicle area, not necessarily the neck.
Yeah, there's two replays that they show. The live shot of the broadcast camera looked like a penalty. And then when you go to the reverse angle where you actually see where the arm comes across and hits him, of course, in slow motion, you can go, oh, well, yeah, I see that that's not a penalty. I've almost come to this idea because everybody wants instant replay or something like that, and it makes no sense to me because how do you do that? Are you banging trash cans together over there?
You know, I'm fiddling with the earpiece. As I told you, as right as we're going on the air, it's decided that it's going low, you know, with 30 seconds before the show starts. So I got it hooked up to the charger and fiddling with it and all that. So,
well, at least we can just get it out there.
I'm a few seconds from cooling it out.
At least we can get it out there, though. There may be some crackles or some technical difficulties during this episode because we had one whole show that was nothing but that.
Where was the echo? And I'm pretty sure. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it was because I had my earpiece halfway out, and it was echoing through the entire broadcast.
Well,
and I didn't even notice.
Yeah, what was fun about that show is we were sitting around after the show trying to figure out what the noise was coming from. I thought I was sitting in a creaky chair. We had no clue. It took us a while to figure it out, and then one day we were listening. It's like, oh, aha! That's what it was.
Fiddling with the earpiece, yep.
So, I've come to this idea that if they want to have replay, you know, have replay for everything, fine. But only show these replays at full speed. Because you can slow anything down in super slow motion and things will look better or worse. Yeah, that hit doesn't look anywhere near as violent when you play it frame by frame.
You could argue it looked more violent when it slowed it down because his neck did this sort of Stretch Armstrong thing where it was kind of, and you didn't really see that live, so it actually looked a little worse when you slowed it down. But that's an interesting viewpoint. If you show replay, only show it full speed, and if they don't catch it, then they don't catch it, because a lot of the stuff you kind of have to slow it down in order to get it right. So I guess I fall on the other side of that. I'm fine with them slowing it down just so long as they get the call right. That's the most important thing to me. But, yeah, because if you show those replays at full speed, just like they have to call it when, you know, when it's actually happening, that's not going to really help much because they're just going to call it whatever they saw the first time in full speed. They're not going to really see the benefit of the replay is that it does slow it down and allows you to see, oh, that ball did scrape the ground. I guess that's not a catch. You know, so that's what's important to me is to just get the call right.
Yeah, I'm talking more on, like, the judgment call stuff. You know, the pass interference and things, you know, oh, look, he brushed the guy's jersey, split hair before the ball got there. Speaking of these hits on the quarterbacks, I remember, I think it was last year, where a guy got flagged 15 yards because he ran by the quarterback and his fingers gently grazed the quarterback's head on the way by the quarterback. Basically, his arm was just stretched out and the fingers just caressed. Would be the right word. Just correct the quarterback's helmet and the flag came out, and that was 15 yards. So when I talk about things that are lesser being thrown out and flagged, then, yeah, I could see where that one was flagged. Because if you're going to stand behind, this is what you're doing, and you're protecting these guys, then do it. That overshadows, though, the fact that, especially in the New England game, how well Carolina played. They played a really good game. They were definitely the better team on the field. We doubted them severely 2 weeks in a row. And they're shutting us up. After San Francisco's like, oh, hey, let's see you do it again. Well, they just beat the Patriots. That's not an easy thing to do.
They beat San Francisco and New England back-to-back. There's nothing easy about that, and all props go to them, absolutely. I tell you, what I saw from them, the sort of swagger and attitude, there's a difference between the cocky swagger of not having accomplished anything and what Carolina was showing. I understand Carolina hasn't accomplished anything yet either. They've won zero titles. But there's some teams out there, guys on Jacksonville or Tampa or somebody like that, that'll make a play and get up and start, wiggling their head around like Merton Hanks and showing off and celebrating. And that's not what I'm talking about. That's just, being an ass. That's just, celebrating because you did something good on a football field, as if you never did it. But what I saw out of Carolina against New England was sort of a more, quiet, but the way Steve Smith's mouth was yapping, there's nothing really quiet about what he does. But it was more of, we're going to show you how good we are. We're not going to, necessarily talk. Steve Smith likes to talk. He's going to show you and talk. So that's what he does. But everybody else was more about, let's show everybody how good we are. Let's show the world what we got as a team. And we're going to show off our swag just by performing well, by actually executing the game plan and doing what we do. That was kind of scary to me. That was one of those moments to me where you see a team sort of take that next step. We always talk about waiting for teams and players to take the next step. And to me, what Carolina has done, not even so much against San Francisco, because they weren't all that impressive in that game. I didn't see that swagger in that game necessarily. They sort of pulled that game out, in my opinion, based more on the lack of weapons for San Francisco in the passing game more so than anything Carolina was doing. But New England obviously has weapons. They have Tom Brady. To pull that out, especially the way they did with that last drive where Cam Newton cannot get that drive completed for the game-winning touchdown unless he's playing great football, unless he has poise, unless he has confidence. You have to have all those things to put that drive together. That doesn't come together by accident. And he put it together. He did what he had to do. When the pocket broke down, he ran and got it done with his legs, and that set up being able to get it done with his arm, because you have to respect his legs. It just all came together for me, and it's kind of scary when you see that happen. And what I can't wait for now is to see if they keep going like this, because that's been the knock on Chico Rivera's team the last few years here, is they can show flashes like this. They can be great in spots at certain times, but can they do it consistently? Can they keep it going? So that's what I'm waiting on from them.
Yeah, they're at Miami this week, and this would be wouldn't this be your stereotypical letdown game after two games, gutting one out at San Francisco, and then that hard fought, had to be emotional, very emotional for Steve Smith, win over the Patriots. But that's really what bothers me the most about that game, is that that final play has overshadowed the whole result, almost making it feel like that the refs handed that game to Carolina. This isn't Seattle Green Bay last year, people. This isn't like the Patriots got jobbed. There's no guarantee, even with a 5-yard holding or giving them, there's no guarantee they're still going to win that game. And you go back and you actually watch that replay, you see Gronkowski. And the other thing that you see that you don't really pay any attention to, especially if you're a Patriots fan or if you're ESPN, are the four Panthers all within very close proximity to Rob Gronkowski on that play. And the ball was severely underthrown. You know, he ran basically him and Luke Kuechly kind of ran into each other, and yeah, Luke Kuechly, he bear hugged him, but that ball was 10 to 15 feet in front of Gronkowski and on its way right into the turf. The defender had to dive basically into the ground to make that pick. Refs, for whatever reason, they gave that call to Carolina, which I was surprised by, that they didn't just, you know, bend over and take one for the Patriots, like, oh, you know. But they didn't, and I respect them for that, because I don't think that should not have been the way for the Panthers to lose. I would have been more outraged had they called that, and then the Patriots, you know, run some play from the 1 yard line and then, or had another chance with no time left on the clock to win the game. I was perfectly happy with the result.
That seems to be sort of the most surprising thing when you listen to certain pundits and football experts talk about that play, that call at the end, is that the referees made the call. Somebody threw the flag initially, therefore they must have seen what they thought was interference or whatever, and then picked it up. It wasn't that it wasn't called at all, and that, you know, the Patriots just ran off the field screaming because there should have been a flag. There was a flag. They just decided, after further review, no, there wasn't a flag. Game over. That's the most surprising thing. So,
right. I
and
think
as far
if
as
the
my,
flag hadn't come out, it would have been no big deal.
Right. It may have
or
been
at least
a
not to
the Patriots may, still may have complained that there should have been a call, but it certainly wouldn't have been the firestorm that it is now because of the fact that there was apparently a penalty in somebody's eyes and he was then talked out of it and made to look the other way after a conversation with the other officials. That's the sort of surprising part about it. And one last thing about that is my official view on that play is I actually put the blame for that play on Rob Gronkowski because the way I see it, the ball was underthrown. You know, Tom Brady isn't what he used to be. You can put a lot of blame on Tom Brady. I actually put most of it on Rob Gronkowski. Go after the fucking football. What are you doing? He just gave up. He turns around. The ball's in the air. It's not going to be anywhere near him. You can tell that. And instead of trying to fight through Luke Kuechly and at least get a piece of the ball, at least have a chance at it, he just basically sort of halfway pushes towards the football and just watches it get intercepted. I put it on Rob Gronkowski because of that fact that it's the Patriots, Jason. As you said, the refs didn't just bend over and give him the call because they're the Patriots. I think if Rob Gronkowski fights for the football, they do bend over and give them the call because he will be making an effort to try to win the game. And the referees being human would be like, well, it's the Patriots and they're fighting for it. And this is Gronkowski, this is the Gronk, and he's trying to fight for the ball. And this dirty Luke Kuechly face guards him and keeps him from getting the ball. We got to throw a penalty. We got to give the Golden Boy one last try. But because he didn't even fight for the damn football, that's what made it easy for the referees to pick up the flag. So I actually put it on Gronk myself.
So what else stood out to you? Because this is clearly way, way too much time on refs and the Patriots. And my stomach's starting to turn a little bit.
I love this. I got like 10 bullet points written down, and we spent 20 minutes on the referees. Kansas City, their receivers aren't really practiced at making plays downfield for their quarterback, are they? Because Alex Smith decided to actually try to make some plays once he fell behind. The Chiefs haven't been behind very much this year. And he tries to make some plays, and he tries to get the ball downfield, and his receivers basically all respond with one big, huh? Like they had no idea how to make a play for him because they're not practiced at it.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't even think they practice deep routes with Alex Smith. I mean, isn't everything just slants and outs and swing passes and, you know, over dinks and doinks and all every little descriptor that you can come up with for the guy who doesn't really have much of an arm and can't push the ball down the field. Plus, he doesn't really have burners or anybody who's going to stretch a defense, and Denver knew that. I mean, I give Kansas City credit. That game was closer than I thought it would be. It was a better game than I thought it would be, but ultimately Kansas City You know, they can get into the playoffs. They can sneak up on a team maybe in the wild card round, but they're not going to go on the road to Denver or on the road to another, you know, like a New England or any of those teams. They're not going to go and sneak up on those teams. So yeah, maybe they have a chance. They could win. Maybe they could win one playoff game. I would say the thing that stood out to me, and it's really making me scared, is the hope that the Giants keep giving me now. That they're they just won't go away, and I just want this. I buried them, you know. I buried them 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I was willing to let this go, and then they just, you know, it's like every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
And, that's right.
You know, another 4-6, and playing Dallas, if they can win this game, wow. Then, you know, and if Philadelphia can find a way to choke one up. Although Philadelphia, are they on a bye this week?
I believe so, yes. Eagles are not
on a bye. So everybody will be even. So if the Giants can beat the Cowboys, check my math here, but wouldn't the Giants only be one game out of first?
They're the hottest team in football, baby. Your big blue, your New York Giants.
My Super Bowl pick isn't dead, unlike your Super Bowl pick. Do we have a FedEx mail-in team in Atlanta right now?
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. That team's clearly mailing it in. I wasn't even going to talk about that. That's just so obvious.
They're not even trying. It is depressing.
No.
We'll get to them in a minute.
Yeah, they are. We'll get to them in a minute. You brought up the bye week, and that reminds me to just check in again on the little bye week stat that I tried to come up with. Remember I told you last year and the year before, the teams that had the last bye the week that they played before that last bye, you'd think by having their bye so late in the year, they'd be tired, and they all went 3-1 the last 2 years. The last four teams to have their bye that's going to be their bye this week, I looked up their record this past week 11. They're all should be tired. They're all playing their 11th game in a row, right? 4-0, straight up and against the spread. I think we might have a reverse trend we have to start keeping up with. The teams that are about to take their bye late, maybe they get a surge of energy like, yeah, we can put it all out on the line this week because we know we finally get our bye next week. Maybe there's something to that. Maybe I have to do a little more research and look that up, you know.
I'd hate to say it, but 10-2 over the last three seasons now, that's not a reverse trend. That's a trend. It's only a reverse trend because you thought it was going to go the other way.
Right.
And since that
it's reversed against what I had thought.
Well, and I even remember asking you when you brought up that stat. I don't remember if I got it on air or if I did it beforehand. Does that mean you're going to pick all of these teams this week? Oh, no. Well, maybe you should have. How many of those did you lose? Well, I know you lost Philly because they don't win at home until they win at home.
Until they win at home. That's like that's like the family dog that doesn't bite anyone until he bites someone.
Especially if it's in San Francisco. Wasn't there a rash of that going on out in San Francisco there for a while a few years ago, where people's pets were like murdering babies and people were getting sued because of dog bites and stuff? It was crazy out there. So Philly, that was one. Who else we got?
Seattle, which we both had.
Okay, so we both won that one.
Let's see. Cincinnati, who we both had. You had the Brown Fever, and Cincinnati came back and pulled that out.
I'll tell you what, the Brown Fever looked good early. I know you pointed out that your boy Andy Dalton, he's not right. Something wrong with that kid.
He looks terrible.
93 yards, I believe, was the final.
Yeah.
Now, 3 touchdowns and 93 yards. That's like if Jerome Bettis played quarterback, that would have been his line. Because, you know, Jerome Bettis, back before he retired, you know, he'd have 8 rushes for 7 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah. That's basically what it was. If I heard the stat correct, it was the lowest. It might have been the lowest yards thrown for in history by a quarterback who had three touchdowns. So it was a very strange performance. The fourth team was Buffalo, and oh my God, what the hell happened in Buffalo? The New York
Jets.
That was
one of those where we both bailed off of that Buffalo bandwagon, completely dove right off of it, and it just kept going. No, the bandwagon just kept going, except we weren't on it. We're just laying there in the dust watching that thing. We thought it was going to go off the cliff and
made a U-turn.
Yeah,
it made a U-turn and ran us over. Yeah, just ran us right over. Speaking of those Jets, real quick stat, via ESPN's Football Today, this is going to be wonderful. You love your plus-minus as far as points go. There has never been a team that was 5-5 that had a plus-minus worse than the New York Jets have. They're minus 85 points on the season. 85 points. There's only one team in the league worse than that. That's the Jacksonville Jaguars, widely regarded as the worst team in football. So,
yeah,
congratulations to the New York Jets.
I figured out the Jets. They're a bad team in disguise. You know, they're a bad team, but they'll look good. You know, they'll sneak up, and Geno Smith will have a day, and they'll sneak up on a team like they did on the Saints. The Saints probably still can't figure out. We lost those guys? Them?
Yeah, no kidding.
We lost to them? And then they'll go and they'll do what they did in Buffalo. And make E.J. Manuel look. E.J. Manuel was doing his Drew Brees impersonation. he looked awesome in that game, but the Jets are pretty terrible. But they're 5-5. They got a chance. They could back into a playoff spot. That AFC, the sixth seed in the AFC, that's going to be interesting. There's a lot of teams floating around that 500 mark. And it's probably one of the first times you really talked like playoffs and teams that are going to work on getting their way in. Because, you know, your Dolphins are still hanging around. They pulled out a win over San Diego, surprisingly to you.
Very much.
I tell you, those West Coast teams heading east, but...
the Saints may not have any idea how they lost to the Jets, but they have a chance to get another easy win tomorrow night. Because the New Orleans Saints at 8-2... flying high, sitting atop the NFC South and looking like one of the best teams in football, coming off a big win over the 49ers, in which they managed to win by three, just like I said they would. They get to go to Atlanta, which this is usually a dogfight, a great division battle. Not so much this year. Atlanta's 2-8. They are falling apart. They have fallen apart. They look like they've pretty much given up in all ways you can think of. New Orleans is a 10-point road favorite at the Dirty Birds. Jason, who you got?
This is a good week for myself because I don't talk much fantasy, but I own Drew Brees, and I'm going to love every minute of this. Being a Drew Brees owner, not being a Falcons fan, I'm going to hate every minute of that, watching that team just go to complete garbage, but... Saints, huge. I don't even think squish. They're going to go past squish and go right to huge. I'm seeing 45-10, something along those lines.
Ooh.
Massive squish.
I'll give Atlanta more respect than that because it's a divisional battle, and usually even dog teams get up for divisional battles. So I'm going to really make it close for you here. I got New Orleans 41-20. I got it really being close. But, yes, we both have New Orleans to cover that number. Well, that's it for the live portion of our show. You're listening live on blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. If you want to listen to the rest of the show on podcast, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. And also the archive page right here on the show page. in the I didn't actually
music
do that.
Jumped
that
on
was,
you, right?
Yeah, that wasn't me. That was the 30 minute mark hit, and the show decided to, the music decided to bump up itself. I didn't do that, so that maybe that's a new warning to us that, hey, idiot, you're not live anymore.
I think they figured us out.
I think so. You can email the show in much less detail at gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at IMLBDre. Jason's at IMLBJTG. And I have a recap for week 11 up. Our picks are always up on our blog, and that is in much less detail, blogspot.com. All right, Jason, anything in week 11 that you want us to talk about in addition to what we've already covered?
Well, what I did want to talk about was, you know, you mentioned your recap. Well, I missed my recap last night on Tuesday night because I was enjoying a long session of the new Madden football on PlayStation 4. You know, I was one of the first. I actually, my PlayStation, just getting my hands on my PlayStation 4 was humorous because I wasn't one of those people who pre-ordered one. I didn't get up at midnight to go over to the Best Buy to stand in line in the cold to get my PlayStation. I decided I was going to run over to Target at 8 o'clock in the morning when they opened up and just see if they had one in stock randomly. So I got there about 5:02, and there's a bunch of people standing out front, you know, and maybe 10, 12 people standing out front. So I was sitting there with my wife. We had to get some grocery shopping done before we both went to work. And so I was like, well, come on, stand in line with me. So my wife finally talked her into getting in line, and everybody in the line's looking at me kind of funny. And guy in front of me finally asks if we were there for to pick up our pre-order. And I said, no. And the guy's like, well, you guys are going to get the last one. I was like, what? You know, both of us are like, what? And they're like, yeah, they have 8 of them, and you're the 8th group in line at lunch. So I literally walked into the store, bought it, and walked right out. 10 minutes, we were done. I mean, it was that easy. That's exactly how it went down. People waited in line for this stuff. They pre-ordered it to wait for on Amazon and all these places to wait for one to come in the mail. I literally walked in and walked out. And there were a lot of people who were sitting in their cars waiting for the store to open who had to get turned away. So I picked up Madden. You and I both have a long history with that game in particular. You know, going through franchises, playing against each other. I soured on the franchise in the middle of the last decade. Back in the PlayStation 2 days, there was NFL 2K5 that came out. It was a 2K sports game. Still my favorite football game of all time. I still think it actually has a lot more realism to it than even some of the current Madden games. There's a lot of things in that game that I really liked. I loved the control. Loved that game, but my PlayStation 2 is in a closet and full of dust and barely works, so I picked up the new Madden. I really like it. I do really like it. I haven't played it a lot, but it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of realism that's starting to creep its way finally into Madden. You know, guys that bumble and stumble and crazy ball physics, balls bouncing off of guys' heads. Not everything happens perfectly. A lot of good crowd ambience. They've definitely lifted a lot of the music and the actual feel of what it's like to be in some of these stadiums. You know, you're playing Tampa and there's a touchdown and the cannons fire.
Let's hear the cannons!
You're in the Metrodome and there's a first down and you get the horn. You know, you get that every time there's a first down. Yeah, it's actually the little touches. Those are the things. If you're going to sit down and you're going to play a game over and over and over, which is kind of what you do with a Madden, especially if you're like us where you play franchise mode and right. You go through and you do the drafts and you draft the made-up guys and you make these made-up guys stars in your own mind.
Not the word.
Enjoy that part
of
it. No, but people do this. They wouldn't put it in there if nobody did it. So clearly, there are people who they do this, and they enjoy the free agency and building the team and then playing the games and watching things grow. So I'm really interested to play this one. My most I think you're still playing it as Madden 03. Is that the one you're still playing?
I am. Yes,
but,
I am.
That's still,
what can I say?
I have to say, that's still my favorite Madden game. For whatever reason, that was the one I was the most familiar with. That was the one I played the deepest with. But I actually do plan on sitting down and giving this one some considerable amount of play. The graphics are incredible. The players actually look almost lifelike. And some of the guys look a little plasticky, but it is a lot of fun. So I do apologize this week for not having a review up because I was up late playing Madden. I highly recommend
anybody
who can get their hands on it, or if you can get your hands on a PlayStation 4. If you got $400 laying around, another $60 for the game, I highly recommend it. A lot of fun. Probably the most fun I've had playing Madden, especially playing Madden against another person in a while.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of what I had. Not football-wise, though. I think we covered most of what really jumped out at me. I think the Eagles are becoming an intriguing team now that they finally got this monkey off their back, winning games at home or not winning games at home. I saw some stats
this week
about. Of course,
you talk about Riley Cooper's team and you start talking about monkeys. Of course, you do that. What's going on? Come on, I see right through you.
Yeah,
your closet racist you.
I'm the secret racist. You got me. But
Washington is
serious.
But good, maybe they'll get us more listeners. Washington is going down the toilet. You don't go into Philadelphia and just lose the game and get out executed. You get basically embarrassed. And then Robert Griffin's, spends time after the game talking about how the game plan was so transparent that the other team knew what was coming. Okay, that can't be anything but a veiled shot at, at your coach, and not so veiled, actually. That thing, I think, is about to go reality show because those two, Mike Shanahan and Robert Griffin, have not liked each other for a long time. Mike Shanahan really doesn't like anybody that has a thought. Between Donovan McNabb and Albert Haynesworth, and those guys all had their issues as well. But basically, anyone that isn't John Elway or Terrell Davis that just stands by like a silent soldier and does his job and doesn't give him any lip. Anybody else you've got an issue with? So I think that's about to really go down. And what makes that really interesting is Robert Griffin isn't going anywhere, and Mike Shanahan's contract is up at the end of the year. And something's got to give. Actually, might be wrong about that. He might have 1 year left on his deal. Next year might be his last year. But something's about to happen one way or another there. I think that's going to be fun to watch from a distance, just from a drama standpoint.
Well, I know neither one of us have any major Shanahan love, but when you actually go back and you think about it, Mike Shanahan hasn't done anything in 15 years. That was the last time he was relevant. Coaching or won a Super Bowl, and that's really all you're judged by. There are Super Bowl winning coaches in the last 15 years who have been hired and fired or retired, and for whatever reason this guy keeps getting chances. Or this guy's a genius apparently, but the only, if it wasn't for Terrell Davis, nobody would even give Mike Shanahan a thought.
John Elway might not have a ring.
Won anything. John Elway wouldn't have a ring. They ran Terrell Davis in his 4 good seasons to 2 Super Bowl titles, and that's it. And I don't get it. Mike Shanahan, okay. I mean, we don't talk too glowingly about him, but there's nothing.
No,
because going to be gone. He's going to be gone. Like you said, they're not going to get rid of RG3. And if RG3 is starting to lay these seeds and he's the franchise quarterback, and I that might not even be a veiled shot at Shanahan and company. That might be more of a sending it farther up the line. Maybe he wants Dan Snyder to hear what he's got to say, start to sow those little seeds of discontent. And, yeah, if there's a contract situation, and if RG3 contract was up and Mike Shanahan's contract was up, let's just pretend at the end of this year, RG3 wouldn't be the guy who's gone.
Thoughts up. Which guy are you keeping, Shanny or RG3?
Yeah, there's no toss-up.
A couple more items from Week 11. The Baltimore Ravens had to wait a very long time to lose the game, longer than most people have to. We knew there was going to be weather problems in Chicago. We talked about it the night before. Do you think the league should have delayed the start of that game, seeing what was coming through, or do you think they made the right call in letting that get started?
Oh, there were only tornadoes in the area. I mean, Jesus, come on. This is football, guys. Suck it up.
They're all weak. They're all like Jonathan Martin. They're all pussies.
That's right. Jay Cutler was probably standing on the 50-yard line to show what a man he was during the storm.
That's right. Everyone evacuate the arena, and Cutler just standing right there. I ain't going anywhere. I'm stuffed.
Yeah. Jay Cutler
I'm
ran
amazed.
Out to midfield. He ran out to midfield with a lightning rod just to show what a man he was. Because apparently that's his new move. He's got to show to everybody that he's not the big pussy. And I believe him, but I feel bad for him at the same time, because if the Bears can keep with, I get that weird feeling. Hopefully with Tressman being brought in, it was to mentor Jay Cutler, because they're not going to go anywhere long term with Luke McNown or whoever this guy is.
The great Josh McCown, who everyone keeps clamoring to be the full-time starter now.
But we've been through this in Chicago. We know what it's like when the backup quarterback comes in and even has a moderate amount of success, as he becomes the new favorite player until he breaks down, and then the guy. It is just this self-fulfilling prophecy of why Chicago can't have good quarterbacks, and they need to stick with Cutler, clearly. That's all I have to say about that situation.
Or with his deal being up next year, they could move on. But the point is, Josh McCown isn't a better choice than Jay Cutler when he's healthy. He's just not. He's not anywhere near a better choice.
Right.
And maybe the last thing we get to, you called it. You said if the Detroit Lions in control of that NFC Central, if they shit the bed at Pittsburgh, then they're in real trouble, and lo and behold, they go up to Pittsburgh. Not only do they shit the bed, but their coach, Jim Schwartz, decides to show everybody what a big man he is and show everyone what a big penis he's got by faking the field goal up 4. Now, I don't want to go up 7. That's not good enough. Let's go on 4th and 5 and run a fake field goal. Didn't work out. Pittsburgh turns it all the way around, gets a touchdown, holds on for the victory, and the Lions did exactly what you were afraid that they might do.
I didn't have the balls to pick it, though. I wasn't man enough to actually pick Pittsburgh to do that to the Lions, who we figured shouldn't have been able to handle the prosperity. We should have known. It's like that's one of those 2020 hindsight picks. It's like, we should have known. It's the Lions. Come on. But yes. if it helps anybody in that division, it helps the Packers. They've got Minnesota this week. We'll see if that's a winnable game. If Aaron Rodgers can get back, their schedule down the stretch isn't terribly tough. If Aaron Rodgers gets back for that Thanksgiving game, that's Detroit. We could be 10 days from now talking about the Packers back in control of that division again. So very interesting to see how that shakes up. Looks like we're out of time. Want to make it legal?
This broadcast is copyrighted. And that's the beauty of the NFL. There's so many things that still are going to happen between now and the end of the season. There's still 6 weeks to go. He's Jay. I'm Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. By the way, Friday night, back to Friday night this week. We got stuff to do Saturday. So Friday night, our picks show, 10 o'clock Central Time, right here live. Our picks for week 12 coming up. We'll see you then Friday night, 10 p.m. Central. Yeah.